Hi, I'm Carmen Lamp Jenkins, the Managing Editor of the International Journal of Stroke, and I attended the Stroke Society Australasia Smart Strokes Conference this year, 2018. I've developed a collection of podcasts for your listening pleasure. In this podcast, you'll be privy to a fascinating conversation by Professor of Geriatric Medicine, Richard Lindley, from the George Institute in Australia, and Professor of Healthcare Research, Avril Drummond, at the University of Nottingham in the UK.
My name's Avril Drummond. I'm an occupational therapist, and I'm Professor of Healthcare Research at the University of Nottingham with a special interest in stroke rehabilitation.
I'm Richard Lindley. I'm Professor of Geriatric Medicine with an interest in doing large-scale trials in stroke. So, Avril, a fantastic talk. What I'm really interested in, and you've pressed all the right buttons, is that therapists are not doing any therapy now, are they?
So I think that is an issue, and I think the problem is that they don't even realise that they're not. I think that there is evidence emerging in some of the studies and from some of the audit data that the therapists are frankly just spending too much time talking. Now, if they could treat people and talk, that would be one thing, but some of the observational work suggests that they stop and they talk, and a whole therapy session can go by with actually very little content of therapy. But I don't actually think that they realise that they're actually doing that. But I think it's something we need to flag up.
I've just had the experience of completing a large rehab trial in India where our intervention didn't work. Yeah. And in our process evaluation, which in the International Journal of Stroke last week, we've identified that counselling was a predominant part of the trainer's time with the patients and the carers.
Yeah.
I think you've found the same in your studies, too much talking.
Yeah, and I think it's not saying that talking isn't important, but the problem is these are trained therapists with expertise in rehabilitation, and I think that their skills are probably better placed elsewhere. I think your trial was absolutely fascinating, but I think the other issue is the whole kind of culture about rehabilitation in India as well, which probably people needed some conversations around what was happening too. So I think it was a great trial.
So let's go back a little step, because you're talking here about people talking instead of doing therapy. I mean, I thought they were the same thing. Can you explain why they're not?
Well, so a lot of the evidence is around practice and repetition. And if you can talk to someone while they're practicing and repeating activities and relearning how to do something, that's fine. But it does seem to be that the therapists are stopping and they're talking. And as I say, that if this was just one or two times, that would be fine. But there is this worry that a lot of the therapy content might be dialogue.
And where does that come from?
So we've done this study called Extras in the UK, which hasn't been formally reported yet. We're looking at the results and we have to unpick some of them. But on the surface, although it was contact with people by telephone, our hope had been that they would refer them back into the system. But there has been some audits, the national audit, again showing up that there is this worry about people not getting enough therapy, and some of it might be around the fact that therapists are spending time doing other things as well as talking.
And Richard, you said that you had that experience as well in one of your wrap-ups with Attend. Can you talk us through that?
Well, we talked to our intervening therapy people. We call them stroke coordinators. And after we told them that the trial had not achieved its aim, we also had a sort of ad hoc focus group at the collaborators meeting. And the talk about the crisis of stroke and the counselling really became apparent. In India, you're having your stroke 15 years younger than in Australia or the UK. That means you're generally working. And if you're the man, you're the breadwinner. So the stroke is a financial catastrophe leading to bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And you know, the heat is on. And Lutz has done fantastic qualitative work, which has found that in acute stroke, you're in crisis. Now, you and I, if we're in crisis, are we good at revising for an exam? Well, no, we're not. If we're in crisis, are we going to be good at learning a task for rehab? I don't think we are. Maybe that's why subacute rehab might be producing better outcomes, because you're out of crisis, and you know the whole incentive to get people out of the hospital and home. We may just be missing the boat here. get them out of crisis, then they're in a position to have rehab.
Yeah.
So I think we need to think about where the rehab should be. And should we reinvent subacute care again?
And again, in my talk, it was around the delivery. It's not that the therapists aren't working hard, but it's often around the fact that they're working in a structure which isn't facilitating them to deliver therapy in the best way. So, for example, the amount of time that therapists are spending in admin is really a serious issue when you think that some of those tasks could be done by somebody else.
And so what do you think for the future is a possible solution to the situation that we've got currently?
So I think therapists have to have a good look at the service that they're working in. And again, one of the conclusions we had from a paper that we published by Clark was that the units have to be much more there for the patients and not for the therapists. And that sounds a bit harsh. I don't think the therapists are deliberately doing that, but there should be flexible working. We need timetables so that people are getting the therapy and that there aren't these clashes of like two different therapists turning up at the same time to treat someone or someone suddenly needing bloods when they're meant to be having a therapy session.
And Avril made the fantastic point about the assessments, huge number of assessment scales. We're doing too much assessment. Why don't we just boil down the assessments to the things that really matter and then give the rest of the 90% of the session time to, you know, practice, task-specific practice, which is what actually works. You know, my occupational therapists in my stroke unit tell me, oh, you know, they're not, you know, their dressing is very poor. And I said, well, you're doing the dressing practice. And there's a bit of a silence. You know, there's a problem. We're assessing they can't dress themselves, but we're not doing hours of dressing practice.
And that is actually interesting because that's the same in the UK. It seems to us that the therapists are too busy to be doing something like dressing practice. But as an OT, I would say, well, what would be more important than getting someone able to get themselves dressed? So I think we have to be sensible as well because the therapists are under a lot of pressure to push people through. There's a lot of issue about beds, but that's often not in the best interests of the patients, which is why, again, I think we need much more political clout than we have to argue the fact that, you know, stroke is a national priority for people and the management is really important.
And I think it's the role of doctors like myself to really emphasise to management the importance of allied health. They're the first to be cut, and it's terrible.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've been listening to an interview with Avril Drummond and Richard Lindley from the Stroke Society Australasia Smart Strokes Conference 2018. This is a series of podcasts from that event. Please have a look on our Podbean site for more. The International Journal of Stroke is the flagship publication of the World Stroke Organization. Please consider becoming a member. You can find links to membership in the text of this podcast or at www.world-stroke.com.